those who love it, love it. They buy more as their lifestyle changes. If their family's expanding because their kids get married and then start having grandkids, or maybe they retire and have more time to travel. When I used to do customer focus groups, there was a guy who was a former corporate executive, and he told me that he took a part of his bonus every year and would essentially just buy another week. So by the time I met him, he had acquired something like 35 weeks, which is basically most of the year. And because he was this primary owner, he always got first dibs when there were renovations or upgraded suites available. He was truly the king of that castle. And wow. He was like, yeah, this is my retirement plan. Like, why would I go into a nursing home? Welcome to the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success, where we explore life at the intersection of money. I'm Kirsten.
And I'm Julian. And today we're talking about timeshares. That's a lot of T's. Today we're talking about timeshares.
Talking about timeshares.
Let's do it.
You know, this is a topic that is near and dear.
Let's not make this a thing because I can't keep up. Let's go ahead and end this right here.
All right. So before we jump in, quick shout out to, again, those of you who listen and send us little notes to let us know what you heard. In particular, shout out to Lunar Enterprise on Instagram, who commented on episode 99 and the pasta sauce reference about direct indexing. I don't know if that reference led to an uptick in direct indexing, but it certainly led to people sharing their favorite tomato sauce.
It might have led to an uptick in tomato sauce sales. But right. The point is, like, it is a confusing topic. Investing can be confusing. Thinking about indexing can be confusing. And so when you add like another layer to that, like that's one of the things that I really appreciate about food and music and things like that, because it's a bit of a universal language. And so anytime we can tap into some other idea to help explain something that's really complex, we really tend to do that. And so thanks again to Lunar Enterprise and everyone, to your point, that's left a rating and review or left us a note or a funny DM or something like that. We always look forward to reading those. So keep it up. And maybe we'll find some kind of food reference for timeshares.
I don't know about food reference.
You know what? I will accept that challenge over like just dropping T's. Like that's a lot of alliteration. So we'll do that. Let's jump right into it. There's a lot to talk about with respect to timeshares.
Yes.
And I don't want to assume that everyone knows even what a timeshare is. And so let's just start there. Like what is a timeshare? What should people know?
Well, quick backstory. The reason why this topic is so near and dear to my heart, familiar to me, is because when I was in corporate marketing, partnership marketing, one of our largest partners was a timeshare, and it was one that I was directly responsible for. And so my job was to manage their lead funnel. So I know I got a little insider knowledge that I may drop on you.
And for the record, I do too, right? So for like the last, I think it was maybe 2 years of my corporate career, timeshare was a portion of my job. And so you were like more so in it day in and day out.
Yeah.
It was almost like a secondary responsibility for me, but I'm certainly more familiar with it than most people
adjacent.
Are. So I don't even know why it took us so long to even like do this episode.
I know.
But anyway, let's go ahead. What is a timeshare? What do people need to know?
So a timeshare is a contract that you can purchase that entitles you to stay at a property like a resort at an agreed rate for an indefinite period of time. Now, there are lots of people who visit the same place every year, every single year. And every year, they're at the mercy of the going rate for a hotel room given the market. So one year, it might be $200 a night, and the next, it might be $350 because there's a conference or limited supply, or maybe somebody TikToked it, and now it's really popular, and you got to pay $150 more per night.
Right.
But when you get a timeshare, you're basically buying the right to stay at a resort for a set number of days at a set rate that you agree on when you sign the contract.
Okay.
So instead of paying when you go, like typical vacationers, you're paying in advance or in a payment frequency that really works for you. So let's say you purchase a week in Orlando. You can pay your annual rate for that week every April after, say, tax season. Or you can break it up into biannual payments, quarterly payments. It's really up to you. It's kind of similar in terms of flexibility to when you finance a car. They can pretty much make it work for whatever your budget allows for. So there are also other fees. Since you're buying or really leasing real estate, you also share in the cost of that ownership. So you may pay what's called a maintenance fee. You may pay club fees, assuming the property, or there may be some special assessment to get something new installed at the property. Let's say you guys vote to get a dog park or a new water slide.
Water park.
Yeah. So you should really think of it the same way that you think about owning a condo if you have a homeowners association or an HOA. It's very similar in terms of dynamic.
Yeah, I was going to say look and feel. And I was kind of implying, because every time you say homeowners association, people start like, oh my God. To a degree, you have a similar sort of relationship with other timeshare owners or an association that might be leading that. All right, so there are also two types of ownership. The first one I'm going to talk about is what's called a deeded timeshare, right? So when I think about deeds, you think titles or deeds, basically a document that says you have ownership over a piece of property or over some object. In this case, we're talking about like your share of a resort, which in many cases is a unit or a set of units. When you're talking about a deeded timeshare, this is a type of ownership that says that you are part owner or partial owner in this particular property, because otherwise you wouldn't be able to buy like a resort, right? But now you can own sort of a little slice of that resort. So that's one type. The other type is called right to use timeshares. And I think this is the one that most people are likely more familiar with. And so a right to use timeshare is similar to like a lease agreement. And rather than owning that property, this is also like a non-deeded timeshare, which is in that case, you would own it and consider it personal property. But in this one, it's like, all right, well, I own the right to use this timeshare for a certain period of time. And as you said in your explanation, that's typically about a week. I think you can do more in some cases. I don't know that you can do less. Maybe you can. Yeah, I've not heard. Okay, I've never heard of anyone doing owning less than a week. But there you have it. I think most people tend to have it for about a week. So there are two types: deeded timeshares and right to use timeshares. Now, I'm going to jump right in because like reality is like timeshares, for those who know, are pretty controversial and pretty polarizing. You either love them or you hate them. I was going to say it's kind of like cruises, but like I would say it's still different because I think it's the commitment. Yeah, yeah, it's different with cruises, right? And so I want to do a little bit of a pros and cons here, right? So let's start with the love.
Yes.
What people tend to love about the timeshare is the idea of owning a vacation property. It's like the next best thing, right? If you can't buy a vacation property, like the literal next best thing is, well, you can own a timeshare. It's in a vacation destination. You own your little slice of heaven. So that's one of the things that people really, really love about it. And again, it doesn't cost nearly as much as it would. It's a lot less hassle, a lot less painful, even just from a vacation planning perspective, knowing that you get to go to the same place or a different variety of places. We'll get to that in just a second. Eases the process of planning for a vacation. And that's certainly something that timeshares can help you with. Second reason why people tend to love timeshares, I would say, is point conversion. So assuming you don't want to stay at that property, in a lot of cases, you can convert your week in, let's say, Panama City, Florida, for a week, assuming your timeshare is a part of a similar system, for a week in Las Vegas or a week somewhere in Mexico. It just kind of depends on what you bought into. In some cases, it's like for like. In other cases, they've got like a point system where you can say, all right, well, 1 week and this place is worth X hundred or thousand points. And then you can sort of transfer that to go to another place, right? Similarly, this sort of point game that people play with timeshares, and this is kind of a segue to the third point or the third thing that people love about timeshares, which is really hotel partnerships, right? So there are timeshare brands that are independent, standalone brands. And then there are timeshare brands that partner with popular hotel chains, the Marriotts, the Hiltons, the IHGs of the world. And basically, it allows you to do a similar conversion where you can say, all right, instead of having my 1 week in Orlando, which is what I normally do, I want to trade that for a stay at, I'm just making it up, the Hilton in the Dominican Republic or the Marriott in Mexico somewhere. And some of these programs allow you to do that. That's another huge benefit. Again, it just makes people feel like it doesn't really matter. I'm always going to have somewhere to go, right? So that's one of the perks and the reasons why people love it. When we're talking about the properties or the resorts themselves, one of the biggest differentiators, I would say, between hotels and timeshares are the space. Like, I think people tend to kind of complain about how cramped a hotel room can feel, especially if you're traveling with family. But if you think about it, timeshares, you go in, you're staying for about a week. You're going to have more stuff. In some cases, you're bringing the whole family. You stuff all that stuff in a hotel room, it can get really, really cramped. Timeshares are like significantly bigger. I'm just making up a number here.
Yeah, they're like the OG Airbnb.
40 to 60% larger, right? They're good in between, but they're huge. And some of them have, like, I'm not going to say some of them. Well, they just depend, really, property by property. Different rooms, different suites. Most of them, I would say, even come with, like, full kitchens, like, separate bedrooms, like, the whole thing. It's like a condo or an apartment in a vacation destination. All right, so those are some of the things that people tend to love. I'm sure there are others, but those, I think, are some of the primary reasons why people tend to love timeshares. Now let's flip a little bit and go on to what people don't like. I think one of the biggest things is kind of quality, right? When you're talking about timeshares, again, especially those that are independent brands, it's very similar to hotels. Like, there's a big difference oftentimes in quality between reputable mainstream brands that have huge systems and they get lots of turnover, and so turnover in terms of, like, the actual rooms, and so they're cleaned a little bit more often. I think more often than not, there are some people who kind of feel like when I stay at a timeshare property, I just don't quite get the same quality as you do. Not saying that that's a blanket statement, but that is something that people have complained about.
And I think part of that is because of the HOA dynamic.
Correct.
It's not like they can just make renovations when they want to.
Correct.
It has to be approved.
Correct.
And funded by all of the timeshare owners. So they're usually on schedules, which are, you know, 10 to 15 years for what they call hard goods, the furniture.
Yep.
Which means, you know, if you think about furniture styling 15 years ago, some of them can look a little dated.
Correct.
Compared to, like, a modern hotel.
Correct. But to be fair, like, that is sort of the issue in a lot of resorts or hotel resorts as well. Like,
sure.
You can have one and it may take them 15, 20 years, or they'll phase it in. Very similar dynamic here. When you're talking about
big properties. If that doesn't matter to you, then it's not, you know.
Yeah.
But for a lot of people, the aesthetic, the design matters.
For sure. For sure. Okay. So one of the other reasons that people tend to not like timeshares, I would say, are kind of the property amenities, is what I'll call them. And that's basically all the things, like, outside of the room that are part of the vacation experience. And so think about, if you're going to a resort, you should pretty much know that you might have a full service restaurant. You may have multiple full service restaurants, activities, room service. You're not really going to get that. Or I would say it's less consistent that you're going to get all of those things at a timeshare. In some cases, it just depends on the property. You may have one that has all of the things that you're asking for and more. And then you may go to another that is just kind of like, it's a condo. It's up to you. BYOB, BYOF, BYO,
everything. Go explore the town.
Exactly. Like, you're here, you're right on the beach, or you're right in the middle of where you want to go. You're, you know, everything else is up to you, right? So that tends to be something that happens with timeshares. The third thing, and I would say this is a big one, is fees, right? Like, these fees always kind of sneak up on people. And you mentioned them. It's the maintenance fee. It's the seasonal fee. It's the, like, local, like, gosh, it's the same thing with resorts, but it's a lot of fees. And then the last one, I would say, this is probably the one that I think has turned off, like, a vast majority of people. And it's that pushy sales experience because people, again, are unfamiliar with what it means to be a timeshare. It feels too good to be true. They feel sucked in. And that whole experience can be, in some cases, a little bit aggressive. And I think you know a little bit about that, don't you?
Yes. So I'll start with this. One of my old mentors taught me early in my career that there's a difference between a sold good and a sought good. Sought goods are things that people naturally want. So a hotel room is a sought good. When you're going on vacation, you naturally want a hotel room. A timeshare is a sold good. People have to be convinced to want it. Very few people wake up and think, ooh, you know what I want today? To buy a timeshare. Like, it's just not a naturally occurring thing.
Right.
So the sales process reflects that. And they try to woo you in typically with a free vacation.
Yeah, it's like, I bet you didn't know you had this problem. You do. Did you know this?
Yeah.
Did you know that? That's a problem. And I got the solution.
Yeah. So I'm sure most listeners have either received the phone call or seen the booth at the airport or in the lobby of the hotel where someone is offering you a free 2 to 3 day stay. You can always buy more days if you want to. There's always an upsell. And the only thing that you have to do for it to be free is to listen to a quote unquote short presentation about buying a timeshare.
How short is short?
Well, you know, it depends. It depends on the salespeople. It depends on the vibes. But the goal is to wow you with affordability and freebies.
Yeah.
So they typically will take you on a tour of the property. They will show you these heartfelt videos, long-term customers. There are stories of families from different states who bought the same week and over time ended up being close friends. Oh, and then eventually their kids got married. And oh my gosh, like, thank you, timeshare.
Don't you want that to be you?
There are other couples who have memories from when they were kids. Now they get to bring their kids. And even when you walk around, you're seeing tons of happy people across all ages enjoying all of these amenities.
Yeah.
And once all of that is over, they ask you, are you ready to sign? And if you walk out of that door today, the rates, the experience, the package, the happiness, all of that goes with you. You got to sign right now if you want to be a part of this. And that is kind of what, I mean, that is what turns people off. It's the pressure of like, you need to sign before you leave.
And I tell you, they're good because I know really a good. Lot of people who know this. Like, there's so many people that I know, like, they know this. Like, I'm signing up for the freebie thing because it's a better deal for me and my family. It's like the only reason that we can afford to go to this place. And so we're going to go, we're going to have a good time. I'm going to sit through their little presentation. I'm going to walk right out of there. I'm going to get my free lunch and call it a day. And then they get hit with that new fact. It was like, oh, and did you know?
Yeah.
That like, well, actually next year, and you guys are going to be the first one in on this.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to be launching a new partnership with such and such, which means you can get in here and there, and there's going to be a water park over there for the same price. But you got to sign now in order to go ahead and lock this in, because I can't promise you that this rate is going to go up. And it's so funny that people who sort of get lured into it, they may go on like two or three free vacations, but a third one, they're like, you know what?
This makes sense.
This actually makes sense.
These are some of the best vacations we ever had.
It's so funny. It's so funny. And so, yeah. But I mean, you're like even more familiar with timeshare because your dad owns a timeshare.
Full disclosure. Dad owns a timeshare. And they bought one in Hawaii. They've used it over the years a number of ways. I think they've gone to Hawaii once, but most of the other times they'll cash it out for points, which we'll talk about after the break. But I think one of the other reasons that people are so wary about the sales experience is because it causes buyer's remorse a lot of times.
Yeah.
And getting out of a timeshare agreement can be darn near impossible. So you really want to make sure that it's what you want before you sign up for these things. And then they don't give you a lot of time to do that.
Yeah.
Now, there are tons of nightmare stories out there of people who got caught up in the moment and want to get out of their timeshare. And the pandemic has only made this worse as people are squeezed for money. And then this bill comes along. They want to know how to get rid of it.
Yeah, it's interesting because I don't want to say it's going to get worse, but I kind of feel like I'm in the process of a bad situation sort of coming to life. One of my friends over the last year, like during the pandemic, went on a quick vacation with his girlfriend to Vegas, and he came back and he reached out to me. He was like, man, like, it was almost like, man, you're gonna be so proud of me, man. Like, I found this thing, man. I bought this timeshare in Vegas. It's like a bachelor pad, but I'm gonna turn it into an Airbnb. And I was so confused because he was like, he bought this week, he went, had a great time. He's probably had too much fun in Vegas and got sucked into this thing, bought a timeshare, but his plan the whole time was to turn it into an Airbnb. And I was like, wow, that's going to be a little scary. So to your point, like I was telling him like, oh man, I know you're proud of this, but there might still be time to get out of this.
Yeah.
I don't really know what he did, but these kinds of things happen. And so, yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah. According to U.S. News and World Report, there are some things that you want to consider to legally get out of your deal. One is to use the rescission period that you talked about. That's basically a brief, very brief, like a week and a half brief period of time where you're allowed to exercise your right to rescind the purchase agreement.
Yeah.
The other one is to call the timeshare developer. You can also rent your timeshare out. Again, to your friend's point, like it really depends on the developer and the owner of the timeshare, what the stipulations of renting are. There's definitely terms and conditions that you have to pay attention to.
Right.
You can sell your timeshare on the resale market, but you need to expect to take a huge hit on what you paid for it versus what somebody's willing to give you for it.
Yeah.
You can gift your timeshare to a friend, family member, or even a stranger if that's how you roll. You can stop your timeshare payments, but if you do that, just know to expect consequences.
Oh, for sure. So, timeshares, just like a car, an apartment or a home, like when you finance a timeshare or your timeshare, it gets noted on your credit report. And so if you default on that loan, you decide that, you know, none of the things that Kirsten just listed are going to work for you and you're just going to stop making payments, like rest assured that is going to have a negative impact on your credit report and on your credit score. And it can be pretty serious. This kind of reminds me of even when we were talking about repossessions a little bit, like some of these things can like really, really do damage to your credit. So if you have a deeded timeshare and you just decide to stop making payments, they foreclose on it. Same way, right? You own property, you stop making payments, they foreclose on that property just as they would if you owned a home. This can make your score drop about 100 points or more, and it can stay on your credit report for up to 7 years. And just like we discussed, like I said, I think it was episode 90-something, 94, you can be sued by the company that owns it, right? Because you signed up to pay for something and to send X amount of payments over, or in some cases in perpetuity. Yeah. And so when you decide to default on that, like they can sort of sue you for damages plus fees, and it just can become a nightmare. And again, that's one of the reasons why timeshares have such a bad reputation.
I would call it a complicated reputation because it's both good and bad. But to your point, selling it isn't exactly a walk in the park because of that complicated relationship. Yeah. For starters, people who are buying a timeshare in a resale market expect it to be discounted because they know you're a motivated seller.
Yeah, it's like buying a house on an auction.
Yeah.
It's like you sort of know or you assume.
Yeah, this person wants to get rid of it regardless. So I'm going to go as low as they possibly can.
Yep.
But then secondly, there are fees involved in selling. Think of it the same way you would any other real estate. There'll be broker fees, administrative fees, listing fees, all kind of fees. And lastly, if all of that wasn't enough, there are tons of scam artists out there masquerading as resellers. So you'll have someone who, again, knows that you are a motivated seller and promises to make the sale super easy to you because they know that you're vulnerable. All the while, they're just collecting the fees from you and you're still on the hook for the property.
Yeah.
So you want to make sure that if you decide to use what's called a timeshare exit company, that they're reputable, that they are positively reviewed in the Better Business Bureau, and preferably you know someone you trust who has actually used them.
Yeah, that sounds like an episode of American Greed. I'm pretty sure I've seen several that involve timeshare.
Well, there are great timeshare documentaries. What's that one of the family in Orlando that built that massive house?
Oh, yeah. Something, The Queen of Versailles,
yeah.
I think is what it was called.
Yeah.
They just remade that one. So I wasn't going to talk about this. So they just remade that one. I didn't see it because she looks absolutely crazy. And then there's a second one that just popped up on Apple TV Plus that's similar about timeshares. But if you're really interested, you should check it out.
Yeah.
Okay. So timeshares. Let's talk numbers. According to the American Resort Development Association, 67% of timeshare owners are married. Fun fact. 38% earn $100,000 or more. And the average price for a week timeshare, this is an industry stat, is a little over $24,000. That sounds so much higher than I thought for a week. $24,000.
I mean, it's a week every year for life.
And it's an average number. Yeah. It's an average number. So I get it. Like, that's inclusive of like,
it's not just one
upscale
week
and luxury
it's
properties.
That week in perpetuity.
Okay. Well, that was the stat. But here's what I thought was actually a little bit more interesting. So 44% of the occupants were owners, guests. And so again, you buy it less than half the time, like owners are actually staying there or they're like sending a friend to go stay in their particular property. 10% were exchange guests, an exchange of what they call, that's what we were referring to earlier, where you've got your property, you exchange that to go stay somewhere else, or you are at a different property that's different from the one that you actually own. So again, it's people taking advantage of the perks and the convertibility of their week. 14% were renters, which is super interesting. And just 5% were marketing guests. These were the people that Kirsten was talking about that get the direct mail brochure or postcard and they say, ooh, that sounds amazing. How could that only be $250? Of course I'm going to do it. Or you're making a phone call and you get transferred because you just want to get some quick feedback. And it's like, well, I have you. Don't you want to stay for a week? So just 5% of them. I would have thought that was significantly higher. Like, I would have thought that was like 30 or 40%. So that's actually a really good thing.
Yeah, it depends on the occupancy of the property. Like, it's a very delicate game of having people that are there, quote unquote, for free.
Yeah.
Because your sales team has to be able to convert those people. And having, like, you're paying timeshare owners. If it's a long-term timeshare, the majority of those slots have been purchased. And so that's also part of the sell where it's like, yo, there's only a limited amount of slots left.
Yeah.
So get in now.
And just to confirm or clarify, the renters are people where in some cases, those properties, you may see a unit rented on an Airbnb mm-hmm. or on Expedia or something like that. It's not, in some cases it's consistent. In some cases it's only seasonal. Like it's
yeah, you don't have to go situation. Through the owner to rent a room at a timeshare. You can just as a guest, when you look on Expedia or on a travel site, rent a room in a timeshare. Yeah. Now, when they realize you're not an owner, they're going to call you and ask you to come sit in on this presentation. They might offer you some Disney tickets.
Are you having a
good time? Or, yeah.
Well, you know, this could
They'll offer you a free dinner. They're going to offer you something. But once they realize you don't actually own there, they're going to try to, you know, get you in for the videos.
Wow.
Yeah, but the point about less than half of timeshare owners actually using the timeshare that they purchased is it resonates with me because that's exactly what my dad does. They bought in Hawaii, which from Atlanta is at least a 10-hour flight. And so because of that, they bought the every other year package because they understand how far that trip is. And I'm pretty sure they've only been once since they've had it. Every other time they've cashed in the value of their timeshare for airline and hotel points.
Yeah.
And they've flown first class to Europe and Africa. He has a thing for Waldorf Astoria hotels, so they've stayed in them all the way from Italy to Orlando. Like, they basically prepay for a luxury experience that they normally would be priced out of. But to your point, there's been a lot of innovation in the what I call points as currency world. Companies have gotten more creative and you can now exchange points for things beyond just hotel rooms. You can exchange them for something experiential and exclusive. I've seen companies offer Coachella passes, backstage concert tickets, Super Bowl access, things like that. Things that a normal person typically, unless you're willing to like wait in line or go early, like you just wouldn't have access to.
Yeah.
And another interesting stat that I know as an insider is that typically 40 to 50% of annual revenue actually comes from existing owners buying more.
Yeah.
So to your point about it being polarizing, those who love it, love it. They buy more as their lifestyle changes. If their family's expanding because their kids get married and then start having grandkids, or maybe they retire and have more time to travel. When I used to do customer focus groups, there was a guy who was a former corporate executive, and he told me that he took a part of his bonus every year and would essentially just buy another week. So by the time I met him, he had acquired something like 35 weeks, which is basically most of the year. And because he was this primary owner, he always got first dibs when there were renovations or upgraded suites available. He was truly the king of that castle. And wow. He was like, yeah, this is my retirement plan. Like, why would I go into a nursing home if I have this? Like,
yeah, it's interesting. And it's one of those things. And it's making me think of a bunch of other financial products that we're not going to get into. But there are some things that actually do make sense dependent on your income levels. Because mm-hmm. as you were talking, it was like, yeah, like this makes perfect sense for corporate executives. I also think it makes sense for business owners who can afford it, because I see a world where you have that money, you write it off as a business expense, you can gift it to employees, you can gift it to clients. Like, I can see how that really, really makes sense. But this raises a really interesting question, or at least it did prior to us recording this episode, which is whether or not a timeshare can be passed on to your children. Because we know that mm-hmm. these agreements are in some cases, or in many cases, signed for life. You sign it, you're an owner, like it is what it is. It's not like you pay it off after a while. And according to the internet, the answer is yes. So congratulations to you.
Yes. I guess I'm a future owner of a timeshare. You know, well, point, between me and my brother.
Not to celebrate. Oh, yeah. Y'all can split the days in half or travel together. Family vacation. I will skip out on those. Y'all have fun. According to koala.com, most timeshares become part of an individual's estate when they pass away. Essentially, the timeshare inheritance is bundled in with other estate assets. And as an heir, you are set to receive that when the primary owner passes away. Hmm. Now, what's interesting is as a beneficiary, you do have the option to opt out. Like if you want to say, you know, I don't want this, because again, to be clear, you're not just like being gifted a free week. You're being gifted all the fees and
oh, yeah.
management and all of that stuff, right? So like, congratulations with like quotations around it.
It's like being gifted a baby.
Yeah. Like, no, it's legitimately like, it's like the car commercial over the holiday. It's like, congratulations, I bought you a car. It's like, is it paid in cash? Because like, I did not ask for this bill. So yeah, like you can be the beneficiary of a timeshare. So if it's one of those right to use timeshares, you can direct the executor of the will to have them give it back to the developer if you don't want it. You can say, you know what, like, thanks, but no thanks. I appreciate it. Let's go ahead and you process this sort of like cutting me out of it. If it's one of those lifetime deeds, then the recommendation is that for the heirs, in this case, you or us, file a written disclaimer of interest with the probate court handling the estate saying, I do not want this. Like, be super clear. Like, I didn't ask for this. I do not want this. Don't give it to me. Don't bring it to my house. None of it. If your parents are still alive, you may want to have them review the terms and contract to ensure that you're not listed. Because again, that's one of the things, these are one of the questions that come up during that sales process. They sort of roll in these terms and conditions, and it's sort of made as a convenience for you, right? Let me give you less to worry about. Mm-hmm. Like, go ahead and sign this thing. What's your daughter's name? What's your son's name? Like, when you're done, like, you're doing, this is a big thing for you. Like, you're gifting the legacy of vacations to your family.
Giving them real estate.
Correct. You're giving them wealth, if you will. And so this is one of the things that sort of get rolled into it. And, you know, again, if you're on that receiving end and you really don't want to deal with that, these are some of the things that you can do to make sure that you are not the brand new owner of your parents' timeshare.
Yeah. Like we said, there are tons of resources online about how to get rid of timeshares if you find yourself with some buyer's remorse. Just want to reemphasize before we get into final thoughts that make sure that you're joining a vetted resource. I would look for a Facebook group or even go to a financial, you know, group and ask the question, has anyone successfully gotten written? See if you can do a DM or a quick call with them to understand their process. Yeah. Don't just blindly click on the first things that are on the first page of Google, because that's how you set yourself up.
Yeah. And I'll tell you right now, you will be bombarded with ads. Because as I was preparing for it, for this episode, for the last week, I've been, hey, looking to exit your timesheet. Hey, you got a timesheet you want to get? Hey, they're just popping up. And I'm like, man, I was just trying to do this podcast, man. Like, I'm not trying to get rid of a timesheet. Well, yeah. We'll see what happens.
Final thought.
All right, let's do it.
So I think the idea of signing up for a timeshare in order to save money has pretty much been disproven at this point. You don't get into these things because you want to save money. You get into them because you value something more than money, right? Like that's what it boils down to. And that's fine. I think the challenge is that they don't leave much room for you to change your mind. If something happens in your life that changes your values orientation and money matters, it's not as simple as just going back and being like, hey, it was fun while it lasted. Like it's very much a long-term contract, similar to a marriage.
Yeah.
Here's the metaphor. So I think it's smart to date around. Date around before you marry a timeshare, or anybody for that matter.
That's so profound.
Date around before you marry a timeshare.
I love it. I have very similar final thoughts. I'd go back to the original promise, which, it made me think of the first time I'd even heard of timeshares. My first thought was like, I was like, what am I missing? Like, why would anybody do this? And I had, I have two questions. So like, what about the years or the times where like rates don't go up?
Right.
Like there's this idea that like, oh, but it's always going to go up. And it's like, okay, well, that's how the economy works. But like what happens in the years where it doesn't? Like, do I get my money back? Do I get a discount? No. Okay. That's interesting. Secondly is in a similar to what you were saying, if the goal is simply to ensure that you always take your vacations, which is a very real thing, like we know a vast majority of people out there are not using their PTO. There are so many other ways to address that problem than signing like an agreement in perpetuity, right? You can get a life coach, get a wellness coach, get an accountability partner. You can do all kinds of things.
A travel agent. Gift cards.
Like, there are all kinds of things, right? You don't have to try to treat it very similar to like a fitness coach or something like that, which, tends to work, but like, this is a very expensive agreement. So, I try to make very few absolute statements. I would say all my short list of like absolutely bad financial decisions and no shade to the other owners out there. But again, like given that there are alternatives, I can't ever think of a world where a timeshare is a good idea. But again, it's not to shade anyone who does it or wants to do it. I'm just saying like there are other ways to take a vacation that are certainly more affordable. So
All right. Well, thank you for listening to another episode of the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success.
This time, we'll share your feedback. Is that what you're going to say?
Yeah.
Oh, see, that was so kinda cliche. I knew you were going to say it.
If you like what you heard during the time we shared,
oh, okay,
leave us a 5-star rating and review. We'll see y'all next week.